Right. So I want to start out this morning by airing something out, kind of confessing something. Because if you were to ask anyone who gets up here to speak, any pastor, any preacher, anyone who delivers a message, if you were to ask them if they were speaking to anyone in particular, anyone genuinely would answer, "I am only speaking to myself." You see, these words have been impressed on my heart, and I am just reciting them. I am just a blender. I get all the nutrients, blend it together, and give it to you in a drinkable smoothie. And I am learning a lesson, and you just happen to be here at the right time to learn that lesson with me. With that said, the past 3 or 4 years, essentially when the bucket of crazy was essentially kicked over and spread, I have been struggling with direction. I have been struggling with finding my place, my part, my mission, my purpose. And to be honest, it's been really hard. And I've been struggling with it because as we sit in the afterglow of one of the most remarkable historic events, let alone in importance to us, it seems that that is the obvious answer, is the cross. But we're humans, and we're not that simple, are we? And so we continue to struggle. And then when we're walking that path and we stand there and we get to an intersection and there are different ways that lead to the same way, or at least we think they do, and then we stand there indecisively, unsure, waiting for the call, for the answer of God, and then the only thing we hear is that whisper in our ear of that old devil who likes to put his 2 cents in where it doesn't need to be. Go down this way. It looks a little bit easier. This way looks like a lot of work. This way, it might be less stress. And we do. We get to that point where we have a decision to make, and we have limited options because the devil has kind of closed off certain things by filling our head full of doubt. The last time I was up here, I was speaking about doubt. Doubt is extremely dangerous when you are trying to move or you are trying to get away from something. If you doubt for a second, something will catch up to you, and that old devil wants to slow you down. But you have limited options because he's shut everything off, and you go down what you think is the only option. Turns out you've jumped off the path. Whereas me, I struggle more with having too many options, where I get to a stop and there are just all kinds of different ways I can go. And it gets overwhelming. It really gets to be too much. And again, you stall in that silence. You sit there and wait. And in my situation, I get impatient. And I hear that old devil like, "Well, that place looks good. Go that way. All right, let's do it." And then we get going, and then come to find out I've been wasting my energy on something that doesn't really matter or something that is counteractive. And you just march down that path. And sometimes you get stuck in those situations, and you have to see them through, and you wander even further away, and the circle back takes even longer. But with that said, these 3 things I know to be certain. I have strayed from the path, and I've done it multiple times in my life. And the thing is that we all have. We're humans. We live on a planet that goes through cycles. We live in a solar system that goes through cycles. So why us, these little insignificant creatures that live on this planet, why don't we also go through cycles? And so we also have seasonal faith. We have summers where it's awesome. Everything is hunky-dory. We're in the place we should be, working on the things we should be, and we feel great. But then we grow tired of them, and it changes the fall. And then we get really frustrated because it seems like we're spinning our wheels, and then we go into that cold winter. We're Mainers. We're kind of used to it. But then all of a sudden, the crocuses push through the snow and remind us that God is still there. But the thing is, it's the journey. And then the other thing I know is that I want to return to the path. I know for a fact I want to get back on that path because there is no other path. And the third is that I feel the final destination I know is promised. Someday, I will trod those golden streets and set up one of the most amazing wood shops behind my house next to the heavenly gardens of my grampy. Someday, we will go there. So, in the meantime, every once in a while, I pull a Peter. And I want to go look at Peter. You know, when he was on the boat and Jesus was coming out across the water on him and he says, "I want to come out too," and he does. Let's go check that out. It's in Matthew 14. I'm going to and just see what happens when we get turned around. 25. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. Would you not be terrified? You saw a dude walking across the ocean. You're like, whoa, that would be something. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, and they said, is it a ghost? And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. And Peter answered him, Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you on the water. And he said, come. So Peter got out of the boat, walked on the water, and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried out, Lord, save me. And Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, O you of little faith, why do you doubt? I can't fault Peter here, but is that not what we do? Especially in this world right now, where you're trying to march down your path and you just see everything around you is on fire and you can't help but see the danger, and you stray and you start to worry about things. And then Jesus and God reaches out his hand, pulls you back up, and just like, ah, you're adorable. Come on. But I want to help you this morning, okay? Now, I want to get you back on the path. And if you are wandering or wondering, then let's go through something. You see, where I grew up, I spent a lot of time out in the woods. And it is very easy to get turned around in the woods, especially if there is not a very clear and obvious path. But there is this little thing called orienteering, and it's an old, outdated method at this point with the world full of cell phones and GPS and all that fun stuff, but it is still very important to know that if you were ever to get lost, this is something that will work without technology. Now, once we get back to the path, it is up to you. It is between you and God of which way to follow, and we'll go kind of over some things to help you figure out. I didn't put it up here, but I would recommend Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Life. It was written a few years ago now, but it is still very, very pertinent, and it still helps out a lot. But we are going to go through some spiritual orienteering. Orienteering basically is a map and a compass. That's basically all you need, and I would say a flashlight if you're hiking in the dark, too. But it is kind of how we find our way back to the path. So we're going to go into Matthew again, and we're going to read something. We're going to read the initial loss. But this is where we're at. Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. It's a good thing that that wider gate and that pathway leading to it is so wide, because it seems by the hundreds of thousands every day, people just keep joining on that path. So spiritual orienteering requires navigational skills using limited technologies. And compasses have been around for a long time. They've actually been around for about 2,000 years. They were actually initially invented around the time that Jesus probably walked the earth, and they were part of a rock, and I forget the name of the rock, but it on itself is magnetized. And so magnetism, we're going to do a little crash course of magnetism, so there may or may not be a test. But orienteering originated in Sweden. It was a training exercise for military, for soldiers, because if they're in foreign countries in unfamiliar territory, they need to be able to know how to get around and what to expect. So with a map and a compass, you can choose a heading. If you've ever watched the show Amazing Race, that is a urban version of orienteering, where couples race across countries, and they try to navigate from one end to the other. If they get a little more technology, like transportation, they're trying to do it as fast as they can, but it's still the same thing. You're basically in a foreign land, dropped off, where you don't know where you are. If you've ever watched Alone, it's essentially it. These guys are kind of walking around in unfamiliar territory, trying to find a place to set up camp. So this morning, I want to teach you one of the most important lessons there are to learn in finding your way through unfamiliar terrain. One of the very first and most critical things to do when you're orientating yourself to where you are or orienteering is finding north. And if you've got your compass, this is the time. So what I want you to do is I want you to hold it out. I'm going to use the one on my phone because where'd they go? That's right. Okay, so hold it out flat. I want you to hold it by the ends and leave the compass because you yourself create an electrical magnetic pulse that can actually mess with it sometimes. So hold it out in front of you as flat and as still as you can. So let's see. All right, let's turn around. Okay, so north seems to be heading that way almost. Wow, look at that. So the guys who built this church, I think, did okay, huh? Seems to be running pretty darn parallel to the middle aisle. Well, so you guys all, can you all concur? You think we're pretty much heading pretty much straight north that direction. All right. Still looks pretty good. Well, I'd say they did pretty good. Well, what if I were to tell you that's wrong? What you are looking at with your little compass is magnetic north. True north, I'm going to switch my phone because it has a little thing, but true north is actually about that corner from where I stand, so we would all be hidden that way. Weird, huh? The thing is there are a couple different kinds of north. There's actually a few, but we're not going to get crazy into it. So you, in your hand, can see magnetic north, and we'll kind of go over that. That's part of the physics lesson. But what I just talked about in that general direction here is true north. You see, true north is a, and it's funny that it's called true north, is a man-made thing. Now, the earth rotates. Now, it's at an angle, but it rotates on an imaginary axis between the north and the south pole, the true north and south pole. And then someone decided that as they explored, they were going to map it out. And once we discovered that it wasn't flat and it was actually a big ball, then we started making a grid. And those lines that run from the north to the south, those are our longitudinal lines. They're all at even increments, and that is true north. But the thing is you and your compasses demonstrated magnetic north. So what is magnetic north? Well, here comes the physics lesson. Did you study? The good news is that you all just passed the only test I was going to give, so it worked out. But I had a physics professor when I was in college. Before anything was taught to us, he stood up in front of the class and says, "Everything I'm about to teach you is 100% false." And we're going around to each other like, "Okay, we're paying you to be here, dude." He goes, "Everything I'm about to teach you is only true when your feet are planted on the earth. When you leave the surface and go up into outer space, stuff gets weird. Or at least different. Everything I'm about to teach you is only on this surface." So two norths. Well, there's actually a few, but we will only focus on these two for now. True north, or geographic north, is the north that was created from our map, our grid, as we went around the world back in the day and explored and discovered, we created a map. But there is also a magnetic north. So the magnetic north is actually called the geomagnetic field, or simply the magnetosphere. Basically, it's a force field around our Earth, and you can kind of see a depiction of it right here, and you kind of notice the teardrop shape. Our magnetic north is a little bit different from our true north because of the way the Earth spins on a tilt. Now, does anyone know the tilt of the Earth off the top of their head? Close. It actually fluctuates, but you're very close. It fluctuates between 22 and 24 degrees from the true north, from magnetic north. And if you look at this map right here, where you stand on the earth, it is actually different because it's not perfectly placed. So, I don't know if you can actually see it, but between most of Vermont and northern Maine, we're roughly 15 degrees off. So from there to roughly there is about 15 degrees. And that is strictly because of our force field, our magnetosphere. But you'll notice with the magnetosphere, the tilt of the Earth, she's spinning like this, but the magnetosphere is more perpendicular to the Earth's path around the sun. And that is on purpose, because the most protection that we need is from a direct angle at the sun. So that magnetosphere protects us, sitting on this big blue ball in the black space, from all that crazy solar energy that the sun emits. Because if we didn't have it, we'd be cooked pretty darn fast. And like I said, the sun, our Earth is on a 22 to 24 degree tilt, and we're spinning pretty fast. But it's okay. Don't panic for those of you who suffer from motion sickness. As I mentioned it before, the force field protects us from all this stuff. So where does this crazy force field come from? It comes from the center of our Earth. Now, this is kind of just a stock projection, but scientists have further discovered that the core of the Earth is made up of two. So you see the shell of the Earth, and that the orange part is the mantle. That's kind of the insulation between the core of the Earth and the surface of the Earth. Because if we didn't have the insulation, we would cook pretty fast. As I go on today, you're going to find out that there's different settings on Earth, that if they were tweaked one way or another, we would be cooked. It's really interesting how all of this comes together perfectly. But there's actually two layers in the core of the Earth, the outer and the inner. Now, the outer layer, is actually warmer than the inner core. The outer core is mainly of two molten metals, iron and nickel, swirling around in there. And then the inner core is nearly between 8,000 and 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's comprised of strictly liquid iron. Can you imagine? Basically lava, but it's iron. And that metal, at that super hot temperature, creates an electric magnetic field. It's at such a high pressure and it's such a high temperature, it creates an electromagnetic field. And they call this phenomenon, geomagnetism. It's amazing, see? But with that, electromagnetism is a basic driving force of nature. There's actually four of them. There's electromagnetism, there is nuclear force, both greater and lesser, and there is gravity. Those four are very common and strictly throughout the entire universe. Those are all natural driving forces. And the weird thing is, and I learned this in physics, is that when you shrink down to a nuclear size, so you have an atom, you have protons and electrons in the nucleus, and they are in an exact weight to counterbalance the negative charge of the electron that's floating around really fast on the outside of the atom. And this phenomenon is very similar to how planets act out in outer space. So when you shrink down to super small size, to atomic size, things begin to behave very similar to jumbo outer space size. It's very, very interesting. Not exactly, but very close. And so magnetism on its own is a relatively stationary phenomenon. This is something that you have probably seen or even did in school, a little experiment with metal shavings and a pole magnet. Our Earth acts like a pole magnet. And you see the North Pole and the South Pole, they attract differently. But it's interesting. We call the North Pole the North Pole because our compass, she points up to the north, but it's technically the southern end. The negative side is up top and the positive side is down bottom. But we won't jump into that. So what does this all mean? Why is this all important? Well, look at it this way. Our true north is something that we constructed from observing how our Earth works. We see that even though it's on its side, it's still spinning on an axis, so we want to be able to navigate. And we created that based on what we observed. The magnetic field, the magnetic north, is something that we had no part in creating, in setting up. That is something strictly God alone did. And he did that to protect us from the crazy rays of the sun. It's something we didn't even know about or think about when it was there. And it's something that we have just recently kind of discovered. And it's something that was already there before we even stepped foot on this earth. So, why is that all important? Because when we look at our compass, it aligns us with that magnetic north. Because since our Earth is tilted, the sun will still kind of rise directly on the magnetic north. or on the magnetic east. Everything gets shifted and it gets crazy. But if we were to go strictly by true north, we would get lost. We would bump into things. We need to know, like most maps, and I didn't get a picture up here, most maps, topographical maps, will say on it how far off magnetic north is from true north. Because when we navigate, we have certain reference points, but magnetic north is something we can't see, we can't really quantify. And so when you are out orienteering, you're out in the woods, and it's really interesting where you take and you want to try and find where you are before you get to go or figure out where you want to go. And so we have to start with finding that true north, that magnetic north. We have to figure out where, which one is which, and how to counteract. And it goes back to our first critical step in orienteering. We must align ourselves with God. That's the first step. On the most modern day maps, magnetic north is listed and allows corrections to figure out the proper heading. I want to go over to Colossians because the ongoing battle of spiritual things and worldly things is kind of how this true north and this magnetic north work. We get into that habit of following a certain one, and we forget that, oh, wait, we're not on the path, we've got to get back, but we've gone so far, we're like, wait, which way is back? So I want to go over to Colossians chapter 3 really quick and read something from there. Colossians was, especially chapter 3, was a very important chapter in my life when I was younger. In Colossians 3, the first five verses, if then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth, for you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. See, those are the things that, even as Christians, we kind of, if we're not paying attention to ourselves, just kind of naturally sink into because we're humans. And we need to realign ourselves. And sometimes we get so far out, we don't know which way is back. The second step, and you actually performed it while we were doing the first step, is to be still and know. You have to hold that compass out because it's got to right itself. You got to hold it flat and you got to concentrate on it. Did you notice that when we all did that, it was a lot easier to focus on that thing when we were doing something? When we had something to do and we had a purpose, it's a lot easier to focus on that purpose. Sometimes the wind gets out of our sails and we're just sitting out in the ocean and not sure of which way to go. There's no directional wind coming, so we got to figure it out. And sometimes we can get it wrong. Most times we can get it wrong. As a matter of fact, on our own, we would probably get it wrong. So, be still and know that I am God. And that is really hard for us, is it not? That is really hard. That is one thing that I struggle with the most, because from a very young age, I was working, I was moving, I was going, because I had to. And that's what we were created. We were created, even scientists agree that the first humans, they were designed to be moving. And they understood that they were to be moving, because out back in then, in the wilderness, without shelters, they were a lot more exposed, and there was a lot more things out there that could kill them. And so they understood that being on the go was the way to go. But the thing is that it is only temporary. We're only staying put for a second to figure out where we're going. And we are called to rest in God. And while we rest, we listen and we plan out or we figure out what the next step is. But I have a hard time because in Proverbs, it says the way of the sluggard is like a hedge of thorns. Have you ever gone raspberry picking? I used to go raspberry picking in the bushes up behind the farm. And they were so thick, you could only basically reach an arm in. But the thing is the berries that were way in, they were huge. And you wanted those ones in there. But they're very thorny, and they're very prickly. And you try to squeeze your way in there. And that's what happens with the way of the sluggard. If you just sit back all the time, everything feel like a thorn. Every time you move, every time you go to do something, it's going to feel like a thorn. It's going to take more and more energy. There is another physics lesson, things in motion, momentum. Things in motion tend to stay in motion. Things at rest tend to stay at rest. It is just a natural law that our world follows. And why don't we follow that? You get into the habit of just letting it hang out, and there is time to rest, but there is also time to be in motion. You can't do one all the time. You need to have balance. Now, the third step, besides being still and known, I forgot to write it up in here, but a very important step if you do happen to get lost is to not panic, because that will only make it worse. Third step, after you've kind of stopped, looked at your map, looked at your compass, figured out where you are, then take in your surroundings. Obvious is to note where the sun is or where the stars are. That's how we used to navigate before GPS, before maps. We would navigate with the sun at a certain point, or the North Star, the Polaris Star, the very tip handle of the little Big Dipper. It sits usually at the northern pole. And so guys on boats without technology would be using stars and sun. But it's important to take note of your immediate surroundings. If you're standing in the woods, then you can look through the trees, notice hills and valleys, maybe a lake or a body of water. And if you have your topographical map, then you can see on those contour lines all those different features. And then with your compass, you sight wherever that piece is. I'm going to sight it here. And you note the angle, because compasses are 360 degrees. And then you notice something over here, and that is called triangulation. You are making two sides of a triangle and connecting the two, and then you are figuring out where you are. It's called triangulation. It's one of the very more important skills of orienteering, is you are figuring out. If you've ever watched a crime show and they're tracing a cell phone signal, they are triangulating from cell phone towers. So they're pinging two or three towers, and from that, they are gathering where that signals come from. It's a much more modern version of it, but it originally came from this triangulation thing where you're using a compass and map to figure out angles. I'm sorry, I didn't tell you it was going to be a physics and a math kind of morning. But once you have triangulated, then you can figure out where you are. And from that point, you can go on to something else. We're going to read in John 4. 1 John. Aha. 1 John 4. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, or for many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come into the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you heard was coming and now is in the world already. Man, does it not feel like that right now? Does it not feel like that? That the devil is in fact in this world just out prowling around? And that's the other thing you have to take into your surroundings. You have to note of danger. You have to know your surroundings. If there is something behind you hunting you in the woods, you need to be aware of it. Otherwise, you're going to cook. So after we figure out where we are, after we test the spirits, after we test those voices, those little whispers we're hearing in our ears to make sure that it is in fact God telling us this and not the devil shoving his two cents in there, we can figure out where we are. And then based on that, we can figure out where we want to be. And then the next step is to choose a heading. Now, heading is essentially a direction. It's kind of a military term, but it's basically your compass, again, is 360 degrees, and so the heading is whatever angle that is. A numerical number is easier to say than, okay, a little bit past east, almost north. We'll just use numbers. They're a lot easier. And once we take a look around, figure it out, we can... This is one of the easiest things to follow by example, but in application, this is the most difficult, because we have to sit and wait and listen on God. Not forever. We are not called to just stay put and let, I know it's a song, Jesus take the wheel, but do it at 70 miles an hour and see what happens. We are to follow, but this is the hardest part, is once we sit figure out where we are, figure out where God wants us to go, the next step, this choosing a heading, that is the hardest part. Because we have that nasty little thing called free will. And it really kind of muddies things up because we have the ability to say no to God, even if he is pushing us, he is calling us. So in James 4, 7 and 8, it says, "Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." There is an order of operations here, and it is extremely difficult to follow. Let's go back to verse 7. Submit to God, then resist the devil. So many times we just want to stand up and shake our fist. Devil be gone! But we're not doing so as God has called us to do. And then we get into the situation where, well, I know God wants me to do this. I know God wants me to have that success. I know God wants me to go through that and do this and that. And we just know it. But the thing is we don't do that first step of first submitting to God. And that is the hardest thing to do as humans because it's that nasty little C word called control. It is really hard to give that up. But there is good news. In Isaiah 26, verse 7, she's up there. "The path of the righteous is level. You make level the way of the righteous." Now, as a carpenter, basically, when I install a door, that's where you start. You start with the level. Because if you have uneven ground to begin with, things are only going to be difficult. And sometimes it may seem from afar that the terrain we're about to go through is going to be a cliffside jump. But the thing is that as we follow God, those paths will be made clear to us. We have to stick with him. And that is one of the hardest things because we first have to submit. And here it is. Number 5, the fifth step, keep your wits about you. Don't panic. The last critical thing to do when you're lost is to keep your wits about you. As you are hunting your way through the forest back to the path, you need to keep awake and alert. And it actually specifically tells us. So let's go back towards Revelation here into 1 Peter. And it is very important that we keep calm and don't panic. 1 Peter 5, 6 through 11, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you." And here it is, "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." In the woods, there are a lot of things that you don't see and you don't know about, and especially if you are hiking in the dark. You ever hiked in the dark? It's a different experience because you're not just worried about where your feet are going, you're also worried about what's in front of you, because if you stand and stare at your feet for too long, you're going to bump into something. But if you're staring up here all the time, you're going to trip. So it's a very delicate balance. And we are called because this world is a fallen world. There is definitely stuff we need to be aware of. And in Matthew, Jesus himself gave us very specific instructions. Matthew 10. Jesus is warning his apostles as he is sending them out or getting them ready to be sent out. He is telling us that a lot of these false prophets come to us like wolves among sheep, and we need to be very key to those. So in 10:16, he's warning them. It says, "Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves." The thing is that we need to be aware that this is in fact a fallen earth. There is a lot of sin, there's a lot of junk around here, and we have to be careful. It also calls us to be in this world, but not of this world. That's kind of hard. It is really hard to jump in the lake and not come out wet. It's actually impossible. But the last critical tool that we should always bring with us out into the woods is our flashlight. And that is found in here. It is also found on our knees, because we need to be in constant contact with God. And one of the easiest, most recognizable verses, John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." But if you go on and read down further, God did not send his Son into this world to condemn it, but to save it. And why? Because we live in a fallen world. In John 3:19, the very end, it says, "And this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people loved darkness rather than the light, because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed. But whoever does what is true comes to the light, so that it may be clearly seen that his works have been carried out by God." Have you ever gone through the woods at night? If not, have you ever been in a larger building or a room at night? My home church up north had interesting electrical, and there was an older part of the church that had a chapel, and the lights, the overhead lights, were in a little kitchenette all the way to one side, and the only way to exit out was all the way back to the other side, and there was no switch there. And so you had to go out into the little hallway, turn that switch on first, and then run all the way back and turn the switch off for the big room and walk out in the dark. But if you ever do that, if the light is in front of you, it will cast a shadow over the things that are in your way so you don't bump. But when you turn around and you are walking away from the light, you yourself cast a shadow and makes it much harder to see the things in front of you. It's a very interesting phenomenon. A few years ago, I would do Easter morning sunrise hikes, and we started, or at least when I was doing it solo, started out at dark. And the exact same thing. I had a headlamp, but I'd forgotten to change my batteries out. And so I would look down at my feet and see my path 20, 25 feet out, and then look up and look for the next trail marker. And then I would repeat that process, because I found myself staring at my feet, wandering off the path, and then stopping and looking and not seeing anything. So then I'd turn around, retrace my steps, and stand there again, and oh, there it is, it's over there, okay. But then I noticed, I told myself, I'm gonna keep my eyes on the trail markers. I'm not going anywhere but them. But then it's May. We have trees and rocks and everything else, and so I was tripping and falling. It is a balance. You look to the light, and then you look to where you are. You keep your eyes on Jesus, and then watch your feet. Where you go. Be careful, little feet, where you go. Now, I want to close with something that my coworker told me. It's the story of when Moses saw God's glory. It's back in Exodus, and I want to share a thought with you that he shared with me, and it was very profound. And so I want you to read along. I didn't put it up there. Yeah, okay. Exodus 33:17-23. I want to point something out. "And the Lord said to Moses, 'This very thing that you have spoken, I will do, for you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name.' And Moses said, 'Please show me your glory.' And he said, 'I will make all my goodness pass before you, and will proclaim before you my name, the Lord. And I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. But, he said, 'You cannot see my face, for man shall not see me and live.' And the Lord said, 'Behold, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock.'" And in the in NIV it says, "in the cleft of the rock." He just kind of shoved him in a rock, like, stay put, don't move. "And while my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by, and then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen." My coworker shared a thought with me, and he's like, it's really interesting that I had this thought after last week's Monday, Thursday, to all the guys that were part of it. Nice job. That was a lot of fun. But the answer to that is in the New Testament. When Jesus was calling his disciples, what words did he use? Anyone? "Follow me." Moses saw God's back because God instructed him to follow him. You see, when you are face to face with someone, you are usually opposing them. And who can oppose God? When you are staring at his face, you are standing in his way, you are standing against him. But if you have your eyes on his back, that means you are where you should be. You are following him. So as music team comes up, I want you to hang your compass somewhere. Put it on your keys, put it in the car, put it somewhere where you'll see it every day. And just remember that what that shows you is where you should be headed. Because there is always one or two ways. Especially where we live, it's Maine. There's always more than one way to get where we're going. But we want to align ourselves. So with that compass, you go through those steps. Hold it out still. Calm yourself, and then just kind of hold it flat. And you need to do the same thing with yourself when you're not sure of which direction God wants you to be going, to which heading you should be going in. He wants you to sit put for a second, breathe, realign yourself with him, and then follow him. And the path before you will make itself present.